I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, I've been doing news now for 30 years in two languages around the world and here in the United States. I've interviewed four presidents, founded a billion-dollar business. I think news should be honest and direct and impactful. That's why we call this Direct Impact. Okay, here we go. The case against of New York versus Donald Trump is on, and here's the very latest. The former president's chief tormentor, i.e. prosecutor Alvin Bragg, has spelled out what the evidence is that he plans to use against Mr. Trump. And it appears it has a lot to do with this dude, this man you see right here. That is Alan Weisselberg. He used to be the money man for Mr. Trump's company. However, last year, he was indicted for grand larceny and tax fraud for failing to pay taxes on compensation that he received for cars, apartments, and private schools for his grandchildren. Weisselberg, according to prosecutors, was also part of the plan to pay off porn star Stormy Daniels by disguising the payoff as a legal expense. Because of that, Weisselberg's actions, and maybe his testimony, will be used to prove that the payoff to Stormy Daniels was not just a misdemeanor, but rather a felony, which could bring about potential prison time for the president. Okay, here is the prosecutor. Here is Alvin Bragg describing or talking about the case and talking specifically about the evidence that he says they will use against the former president.
So the charge is falsifying business records. The charge requires, as I specified, criminal conduct that was concealed. One of the concealed crimes we allege is New York State election law. I sort of went through in our statement of facts, which I think many of you have in front of you, goes through things including, text messages, emails, contemporaneous phone records, multiple witnesses. All of that will be, as you saw in the fall, borne out in a public courtroom in downtown Manhattan.
Right, borne out. In other words, we don't know what the evidence is. We don't know who's going to testify, but he says he's got the goods. Well, Mr. Bragg also says that Mr. Trump's actions became a felony when he attempted, and this is what they need to prove. Remember this. This is important in this case. When Mr. Trump attempted to hide what he was doing.
It's not just about one payment. It is 34 business records, 34 false statements in business records that were concealing criminal conduct.
All right, now let's get to what Mr. Trump has to say. He's denying any wrongdoing in connection with the payment to Daniels and has called the investigation a politically motivated witch hunt. In fact, just after being indicted, the former president invited friends and supporters to his Mar-a-Lago estate, where he compared the indictment against him to a litany of previous attacks against him.
God bless you all. God bless you all. The only crime that I have committed is to fearlessly defend our nation from those who seek to destroy it. From the beginning, the Democrats spied on my campaign. Remember that? They attacked me with an onslaught of fraudulent investigations. Russia, Russia, Russia. Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. Impeachment hoax number one. Impeachment hoax number two. The illegal and unconstitutional raid on Mar-a-Lago, right here. The lying to the FISA courts, the FBI and DOJ relentlessly pursuing Republicans. The unconstitutional changes to election laws by not getting approvals from state legislators.
Now, I should also mention this because this has now become part of the story as well. It is not customary for a defendant to attack prosecutors or even criticize the judge after being charged with a crime. But Mr. Trump is obviously no ordinary defendant. The former president has always been known to hit back and hit back hard at his opponents. However, this time he is doing it not just as a president or former president, but as a criminal defendant. And that, say some legal experts and scholars, could lead to a potential face-off down the line with the judge. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. So to talk about this, we are joined now by our all-star panel. Steve Gill is an attorney and the CEO of Gill Media in Nashville, Tennessee. Also joining us is attorney and executive director of the Rainbow Push Coalition's Peachtree Street Project in Atlanta, Georgia, Robert Patillo. My thanks to both of you gentlemen for being with us. You know what I think this is coming down to, certainly if not in a legal case, in the court of public opinion, whether the former president really had, as Alvin Bragg calls it, a scheme, or whether he was just trying to get away from an embarrassing situation that he didn't want his wife to find out about. Steve, let's begin with you. A or B?
Well, first of all, I think Bragg is right when he says this is an unusual situation. You made the point that he's talking about the case as a criminal defendant, but it's an unusual case that you have a prosecutor who ran campaign ads running for the job claiming he would get a specific individual without knowing the facts, without knowing any details, without even having the basis to do so. It was a campaign promise and a political partisan prosecution. And then the other side is when he's criticizing the judge, it's also unusual that you would have a judge that would retain in a case who has donated to his opponent, spoken out against an opponent, has a daughter who works for the opponent, and a wife who's trashed him on Twitter and other social media. So, yeah, it's unusual that this case is even proceeding.
Counselor, is that, Robert, fair criticism of both the prosecutor in this case and the judge?
No, it's not. No, it's not at all. And I think if you look at any criminal defense case, if you look into donations, if you look into campaign ads that are put out there, you know, there are plenty of prosecutors who campaign on, well, we're going to get rid of the drugs and the gangs in our community. The drug dealers and gang members don't thereafter say, well, look, they said they were going to get rid of the drug dealers and gang members, so of course, this is a political prosecution against me. Let's look at the evidence that was put out there, the fundamental question of, did Donald Trump falsify business documents? Pretty clearly, yes. Did Donald Trump spend $130,000 to pay off one porn star and $150,000 to pay off another porn star, then $30,000 to pay off a doorman about an illegitimate child? Yes, he did those things. Were these things done temporally in a way that would suggest that it was to influence an election? If you're paying off a porn star 2 weeks before an election, then yes, that makes that nexus there to be argued to a jury. So instead of Republicans talking about what Donald Trump did or did not do, whether or not he violated the law, they create these cockamamie conspiracy theories to talk about, well, the judge gave $35 to a campaign at one point in time, therefore we shouldn't prosecute this president for the crimes we openly admit that he committed. So it's a kind of a ridiculous standard to hold. I don't think anyone else in this country be held to that.
But Robert, to be fair, you just said a mouthful there, and if they're able to bring all that evidence and prove all of that, you're absolutely right. It could get to a felony. But right now, as you even described it, what they have is a guy who essentially put down as legal expenses money that he gave to a woman that he slept with. That is a misdemeanor at this point and nothing else. How do you go beyond that at this point without knowing what you got, right? Go ahead, be sure, because I want to give Steve a chance here.
Absolutely. I don't think you have to get to a felony. Let's understand, even if you're saying it's a misdemeanor, he still broke the law. And we're not in a country that says, well, because of your position, because of your power, because of your name, because of your money, you just get to commit misdemeanors or any other crime. I think you should be held accountable for whatever crime you commit, regardless of who you are. That's the idea behind being a nation of laws and not a nation of men.
Yeah, although my point is, why bring just a misdemeanor then if that's all you got? But let me ask you this, Steve. I think this is an important question for me. Who do you think can hurt the former president more, especially on the witness stand? Stormy Daniels, Steve Cohen, or Alan Weisselberg?
I think the problem with all three of them is that you've got Stormy Daniels, who now owes the president over $600,000 for a bogus slander case. She owes him money. It'd be the first time in history that a stripper had to pay the guy she supposedly had sex with. And then you've got Cohen, who is a convicted perjurer and fraud. He's going to be on the stand testifying. And you actually have, as I know both of y'all will admit, when you have a convicted perjurer on the stand, the judge and jury have the right to throw out everything they say, including what day it is. And finally, you've got the guy who was convicted for running the Trump Organization when Trump wasn't there. And that's the problem with these business records claim of Bragg. None of these were filed publicly or required to be filed with the state. They weren't filed with the Federal Election Commission. The Federal Election Commission examined this and said there is no federal crime. The Department of Justice examined it, said no federal crime. The previous DA here, Vance, said there's no crime. And in fact, Bragg said there was no crime until he was trying to play politics and was forced into pursuing something to keep his campaign promises.
Yeah, and again,
by the way, on the drug,
go ahead.
If he's naming specific drug dealers and only going after the Crips and not the Bloods and naming them by name, yeah, that would be political persecution.
Let me ask you the same question. Stormy Daniels, Michael Cohen, Alan Weisselberg, who could do the ex-president the most amount of damage, Robert?
Just as a lawyer always would do, I would say David Pecker. I think that the former publisher of the National Enquirer is the person that will be the most compelling and the most damaging witness, because he was in charge of these catch and kill schemes. He does not have any of the taint on him that Stormy Daniels has, or that Alan Weisselberg or that Michael Cohen have. And I think he has very clear and dynamic information that could lead to the president's conviction.
Explain that to our viewers around the world who may not understand what you just said with this catch and kill. Thing that David Pecker, the CEO of the National Enquirer, was supposedly, allegedly doing with Mr. Trump. Why is that so significant?
Absolutely. Well, from the indictment and from the information that we've gathered, the accusation is that President Trump and Mr. Pecker went through a process of going to people who had damaging stories against President Trump and then paying them off in order to catch the stories before they could be sold to another media outlet, and then burying the story in order to help Mr. Trump either in business or later on in politics. This would be, if it was meant to help his campaign, well, that would be a campaign contribution to Mr. Trump outside the federal limits. So I think that Mr. Pecker's information will be by far the most damaging information to President Trump if he testifies at trial.
Yeah, and we'll see. And by the way, just to be fair to both of you and to the people of America and the world, we don't know who's going to testify, who's going to say what, and whether their testimony will be nothing or something very, very significant. And I think that's a really important point to make at this point. By the way, and Steve, I got to share something with you. This weekend, my wife and I were watching some documentaries, as old people tend to do sometimes when they're sitting around bored. And I saw a documentary about LBJ. I think it's called, for those of you who may want to look it up, The Ladies of LBJ. This guy made Donald Trump look like a choir boy. So there is an argument to be made that suddenly we're prosecuting stuff that in the past we looked away from. No?
Well, and I know that we'll all agree that we've all counseled clients at some point of it's going to be cheaper to settle than it is to litigate the cost, the expense. You know, I've told clients all the time, pay it off and go away. Don't pay me a lot more money to fight this thing. So it is not unusual for settlements to occur if it is this so-called catch and kill kind of deal. You know, I'd ask the question of how is this going to be the intent of Trump? A bunch of these charges are based upon invoices the lawyer sent him. Now, if I send you an invoice, Mr. Sanchez, they may prosecute me for fraud, but you receiving it isn't fraud. The other problem is that the timeline of when these things took place were after Trump was already in the White House. So how is he trying to influence an election he's already won? These are the problems that Bragg's going to have to face if anybody with any reasonable common sense is on a jury, if it ever gets there.
By the way, you can call me Rick. Just don't call me Ricky. That's my son. Robert, let's go to this hullabaloo about the former president. And he did mention, to be fair, he did mention the judge's wife when he was talking. And I think that may be where he can get himself in trouble. Do you agree?
I think it's a poor idea in general to antagonize the other side and when you're a defendant. That's why they give you your right to remain silent, because anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, and whether it's conscious or subconscious. When your lawyers are in there arguing motions, when they're arguing what evidence is coming in, you really don't want in the back of the judge's mind the time that you did, you know, a stand-up comedy routine about his wife, his daughter, and his political leanings. So I think it's a poor idea in general.
But
as a practical matter, I think that President Trump will be well served to talk about the economy, to talk about education, to talk about housing, foreign policy, talk about your campaign, as opposed to continuing to talk about the prosecutor and the judge, because that is a zero-sum gain. You're not benefiting from that. It's not helping you electorally or legally.
You may be right, sir, but I'll tell you what, that's not what the polls are showing. The polls are showing the more he hits back, the more money he gets, the more support he gets, and the more apt he is to be able to beat Ron DeSantis in the primaries for looking really, really tough, while DeSantis maybe not so much. And by the way, that's a conversation I want to pick up with both of you on the way back, how this is going to finish before we get to the finish line, if we get to the finish line, certainly in the primaries. And then the general might be a whole different thing. Stick around. We're going to be right back with both of these gentlemen in just a little bit. By the way, I do have a podcast where I, as a journalist, as a Latino, as an entrepreneur, I share my story with you about what I've learned, how I've screwed up, how I've succeeded, and there's a lot there. It's called the Rick Sanchez Podcast. I invite you to check it out whenever you get a chance. Again, when we come back, well, something interesting happened over the weekend. I went to play golf every Saturday at the same place I play golf every Saturday. And guess who was there? You get one guess, and I'll let you share it in just a little bit. Don't go away.
Pakistanis are still working through the journey of developing an identity, a national identity. There is, you know, we talked earlier about the vibrancy and the dynamics of the media, where all sorts of views and narratives have a chance to debate and come to the fore. But that also has a downside in that everything is up for debate, so nothing is agreed on.
Welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, there have been a bevy of reports about Mr. Trump's comportment since the indictment was handed down. We referred to some of it in just a little while ago, about his anger in the past as well, about his plans to fight back. And then there's the question of whether he'll be more apt now to stay away from public places, maybe avoid the spotlight a little bit now that he's been indicted. The answer, as I found out for myself Easter weekend, is no. None of that is going to happen. As I do almost every weekend, I decided to head out with my friend Saturday morning to play golf at Doral, where I always play. It's owned by the former president, by the way, Trump Doral. There, following along, playing right behind us as I turned around, was the former president. There you see him there with the red hat. None other than the president of the United States. And there's all the Secret Service guys just kind of having a beautiful day in South Florida, with the former president playing golf at his own course. And there I was. By the way, he's got a pretty good swing. Steve Gill, attorney, CEO of Gill Media. Robert Petillo, attorney, executive director of the Rainbow Push Coalition Peachtree Street Project. My thanks to both of you for being with us once again. Well, what do you make of that, Robert? I mean, you know, most of us would probably be figuring things out, maybe feeling a little bit forlorn, maybe staying out of the headlines, staying out of the public eye. He's out there playing golf. He's living his life. And in typical Trump form, dare I say, what do you make of that, Robert?
Well, you know, I think President Trump, you know, this weekend he played golf. He went to a UFC fight with Kid Rock and Mike Tyson,
yeah,
and Dana White. So I think that he's doing what he's done for the last 50 years. He's being a celebrity. He's continuing to be in the public spotlight. But I do think it draws a very stark contrast between his actions and his free time versus what President Biden has been doing in the interim. While President Trump is playing golf, President Biden is securing the sale of nuclear submarines to Australia. While President President Trump is at a UFC fight. President Biden securing military bases in the Philippines to cut off China from domination in the South China Sea. Bringing NATO back together to create a stronger arm when it comes to negotiating against the BRICS alliance and OPEC Plus. So President Biden has not let the celebrity of President Trump get in the way of him proceeding with public policy and foreign affairs as necessary. And I think President Trump is probably at his best when he is in these celebrity environments where he is on camera, where he is, you know, being a host, being a game show host, as he was on The Apprentice, and that is where he is at his strongest.
I didn't think that door was going to be wide open, but since you've opened that door, I will let Mr. Gill respond then to, see, I'm doing the Mr. thing with you now, Steve. Let Steve respond to the comparison between President Biden and President Trump. Go ahead. I know you're chewing at the bit here to get in on this one, Steve.
First of all, I want Secret Service guys out with me helping me find my lost balls when I'm playing golf. I'm so far deep in the woods. I'm wearing orange hunter vest to keep from getting shot by deer hunters. So I wish those guys were around when I was playing.
Me too.
I appreciate Robert's pitch for the president. But yeah, let's look at where we are. Inflation is at record highs while President Trump plays golf and Joe Biden mangles our economy. Gas prices continue to be skyrocketing despite the president continuing to sap our energy resources and energy reserves, giving more power to the Saudis, more power to others who sell energy. Our foreign policy is an absolute debacle. And now you've got the spokespeople for the administration claiming that they didn't know the pullout from Afghanistan was as bad as it is. We're lurching toward World War III, and we find out that the Pentagon has lost documents and leaked documents that reveal that all the lies about Ukraine, about how Ukraine was winning and Russia was losing more soldiers than Ukraine, was actually the opposite. We've been spying on our allies. These documents would have been safer in Joe Biden's garage than they were at the Pentagon, apparently. So, yeah, let's do the comparison of where we are versus where we were.
All right, you guys made pitches for both of your guys. We'll leave it at that. Let's get back to the case. Do you believe... And I have a tendency to believe this. I'll just share my own thoughts here as a journalist, that the left went absolutely crazy during the Trump presidency, so much so that they've given him, hear me out here, given the former president the ammunition that he now needs to be able to say, they're constantly going after me, and this is just another case of it. Do you think maybe the other side, your side, dare I say, Robert, and certainly the media has been a little bit to blame in creating this situation?
Well, I'm going to answer it in a two-pronged fashion. One, absolutely. You can put in a clip of Stephen Colbert from 7 years ago and a clip of Stephen Colbert from Thursday, and they will sound exactly the same, because all they do is talk about whatever Trump's monster of the week story is every single day, 24 yeah. hours a day, 7 days a week. If you watch MSNBC and some of the progressive stations, you know, they were damn near giddy with thought of the birth of their first child when Trump got indicted. So I do think they took it a little bit too far. With regards to their efforts to get Trump, and particularly when it comes to ignoring, one, many of the public policy aspects that more people are interested in, but two, in highlighting some of the successes of the Biden administration. They allow Trump to dominate all of the news cycles because that's all they talk about. But secondarily, part of the reason of this obsession was Trump was always giving you something new to talk about. One thing about Trump was, you know, he would hire some guy that he saw on TV to be the attorney general or the treasury secretary or something. Or he'll bring in Scaramucci for a couple of days, and then Omarosa is trying to sneak into the White House. They were doing enough crazy stuff on a regular basis to be reported on 24/7, but I do think the liberal media went far too far in making that the central point of progressive politics for the last half decade.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And I mean, I'm a journalist. I've done journalism all my life. You know, University of Minnesota, Eric Severide School of Journalism. I think you're supposed to follow the story and not necessarily just try and make friends on either side. And that's what our media has become. And I think in many ways, that's why we are where we are right now. But let's get back to the case, Steve. I pull you back into this, as Pacino would say, because I kind of want to know, as a lawyer, put your trial lawyer on here, hat here, if you could, and tell me how you would play this out if you were representing the former president, and what you think your chances would be of getting this whole damn thing thrown out before it ever gets to a jury.
I think they've got a great chance based upon the motions we're likely to see moving forward. I think there is a real question of persecution with this DA when he's letting violent crimes in New York be reduced to misdemeanors he's trying to cobble together a federal felony case of which he has zero jurisdiction to attach to a state case that has exceeded the statute of limitations. I think there are numerous motions that could end this before it gets to trial. In fact, I don't think it ever does get to trial. I think the Democrats got what they wanted. The big banner headlines, Trump indicted. They were wanting a mugshot. The president has kind of skittered that around and produced his own fake mugshot, is putting it on mugs and T-shirts and making a fortune off of it. So I think that this is, as was pointed out earlier, this is a bizarre case. And it's the weakest, I think, of the cases that are being focused against President Trump. And we'll see kind of what happens. Does this hamper those? I would agree, again, that my advice to a client would be to talk less and not more, because everything you're saying in the public arena can be used at trial against you if they ever get there. And there are plenty of people who could be defending him. And again, I'm not as concerned about the criticism of the judge's wife and daughter, because they are political activists. I think it reflects on him. And the media went nuts about him or his advocates, you know, putting out a story about the daughter, making it seem like he was attacking some young child. She's a 28-year-old political activist and consultant. She's not some babe in the woods who was being targeted by a defendant. She's a political activist. The mom's a political activist. And the judge's donation, small as it were, is still a violation of the law. Will Bragg indict him?
Well, I'll tell you what, the more he talks about the judge and the prosecutor and everybody else, the bigger he gets, the more his polls go up, the more money he makes, and the more DeSantis looks weak and small. And I think that, in the end, is going to be the real story here. What happens in the primary? I think this indictment, if it stays the way it is and we don't learn anything else, is actually a boom for the former president. Robert, do you agree? What sayeth you?
Absolutely. And this is why I have not understood. No one has explained to me this political persecution talking points that the Trump team has been using for the last several weeks, because it doesn't make a damn bit of sense if you think about it for more than about a third of a second. Because one, President Trump wanted this spectacle. He could have done this over Zoom, the arraignment. He wanted the 24-hour yeah. news coverage of him taking off, landing, driving through New York, all those things. So that is not as if the Democrats, quote unquote, wanted him in handcuffs and a mugshot. Trump volunteered for that because he wanted the attention and publicity. And as you said, all this has done is clear out the primary field to make it more likely that President Trump will be the nominee. No one has cared about anything Ron DeSantis or Nikki Haley or Tim Scott have said for the last 2 weeks. So why is that? How exactly is this a politically motivated prosecution when all it has done is help Trump? And then tertiarily, the fact is that more than likely this is not a offense. Even if he's convicted of all 34 charges, he's not going to get a minute of jail time. You'll get a fine, you'll get community service. This will not stop him from running for president. So what exactly will be the political motive of doing this? And quadratically, last point, if you're going to do this politically, you would drop this in November or in October or November 2024, not on a April in 2023, when it really will die out by election time. So the idea of it being a political prosecution, quite silly on its face, but it is the latest talking point out from the Trump team to obscure the fact that President Trump paid for a bunch of prostitutes and now is being held accountable for
okay,
it.
Okay, Robert Petillo making the case for the brilliance and the genius of Donald Trump's marketing and political abilities, because that's essentially what you just did. So it is what it is, and that's where we are. And my thanks to both of you. This has been a great conversation. I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot from both of you as well. And thank you for keeping it so respectful. I appreciate it. All right, here we go. Something else I got to tell you all about something I do. Before we go, I want to remind you of our mission here. It's simple, really. We just kind of want to de-silo the world a little bit. We've got to stop living in little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. They're like the conversation we just had right now. Different points of view. I'll be looking for you again, right here, where we provide a direct impact.